It's the Agribusiness Report. Brad Rippey is a meteorologist with USDA.
If you break it down to individual communities and cities, we did see some really off-the-charts numbers coming in. Phoenix, Arizona became the first major American city to report a monthly average temperature greater than 100 degrees Fahrenheit. That all-time record in Phoenix, 102.7 degrees Fahrenheit, was the average for the month of July, more than 7 degrees above normal. And then we saw those all-time record hottest month on record, if you look all across the South, extending all the way from Phoenix and Las Vegas into West Texas, where we saw El Paso doing the same all-time hottest month, and then to the Gulf Coast, cities like Baton Rouge, on through the Atlantic Coast, Miami, all coming in with their hottest month on record, with persistent heat in place since mid-June in Texas and for much of the remainder of the Deep South since early July.
This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James, joined today by Rich Nelson. Rich is chief strategist with Allendale. They're headquartered in McHenry, Illinois. Rich, welcome back to the show.
I certainly appreciate it. Thanks for having me on here.
Okay, USDA out with their latest World Ag Supply Demand Estimates report. Or was the report, and you and I spoke just a moment before we came on the air here, and your comment was pretty quiet report, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think a lot of us have been looking at both some old crop changes for demand and certainly some new crop discussions on production, wondering what USDA would do, and not too much different than what the general discussion and expectation was here.
Well, let's just kind of jump into it, and we'll start with corn. As I looked at the corn numbers, looks like they're tightening it up just a little bit, but still, we're looking at a pretty big crop, right?
You know, we certainly are. And keep in mind, even though USDA did lower yields today, now 175.1, so we're off by their starting trend by about 3%, which is relatively reasonable right now. USDA still has a large ending stock number plugged in. You know, last month, almost 2.3 billion bushels. Now, still large, 2.2 billion bushels. So the trade a little concerned that at this point in time, we're not yet seeing a supportive argument yet on the new crop discussion.
So, again, that's the production side of it. To get to maybe our price side, we have to keep in mind, who might be buying this? What are we seeing as far as demand right now for corn?
You know, demand for corn, especially with the new crop, is kind of a mixed bag. You know, USDA's current numbers, they're implying about an 8% drop in total exports for the year up ahead. That's a little aggressive, though, because current export bookings are only about 41% behind average. So at this point in time, the trade's a little concerned that we're not hitting these yield numbers enough yet to hit a bullish argument. And certainly for our questions on new crop exports, which are still behind, we might have a little headwind still in front of us as far as the demand argument in the weeks ahead.
So Rich, when we talk about corn, do we also have to throw a couple of countries into that conversation, primarily Ukraine and Russia?
You know, certainly for the discussion on corn, you know, we've got the South American crops and certainly Ukraine. Russia is kind of a smaller player on the corn side, at least, certainly much bigger on wheat. But for discussions on South America's crop numbers, USDA left Argentina's Finnish crop production unchanged. They actually did raise a little bit, raised the Brazilian crop number by 2 million tons. So add a little bit more to that discussion. And one thing to note as far as their 2024 expectations for these groups, no major change from last month's numbers. So as it stands, still a little stout new crop competition in these weeks or months ahead here.
Okay, let's swing over. We're going to hit wheat here in a minute. We'll come back and talk Ukraine in a moment. But let's talk soybeans as well. Just looking at maybe how traders were reacting to the numbers within an hour of the release, and market really not moving really substantially in any direction.
You know, and that's certainly the case right now. USDA's number, I think, in the trade's mindset is kind of a question. A lot of us might say that the corn story is kind of wrapped up, a bit of an oversupply argument, and no major change yet to that story. For soybeans, this is still a little bit in play. USDA today, in the terms of numbers, they did lower the yield just lightly. They're now about 2% lower than their starting trend at 50.9 bushels an acre. The discussion as far as stock numbers, once it's all filtered down, 245 million bushels for stocks. That equals about right where we're currently trading, $13. Just like corn, though, we still have some questions regarding new crop exports. We have just a few weeks ahead of being better priced than Brazil, but that won't last more than 2 to 3 months down the line. So the trade still has concern that this 245 million bushel stock number may need to be raised in the coming months.
All right. Let's talk wheat now, and we'll bring it back into the focus with Ukraine and Russia in just a moment. But just kind of starting, we're wrapping up the hard red winter wheat harvest at this point, starting some harvest on spring wheat as well. So when you look at USDA's numbers, how does all this fit together?
You know, USDA did two things for the wheat side on today's report. It was not just a yield change. You know, they do a 10-state in-field analysis, and they lowered yields just a little bit, 0.3 bushels, now at 45.8. So no major surprise in the big picture for the yield discussion. The second thing they did with today's report specifically, they did have a light revision for acreage. They revised small grain planted and harvested acreage. For today's reports, no major change for the wheat, only a 180,000 acre increase. So as far as discussion on the wheat side, we did see a very lightly net decline in production, but they did recognize a little concern with demand. So therefore, stocks were raised on this report, now 615 million bushels.
Okay. I keep throwing some other countries in there. When we look at what's happening worldwide with wheat production, what are you watching there?
And this was really interesting what they did here today, because they were quite active in changing a lot of these production numbers. The net message for the entire world was about a 3 million ton decline. But if you look across the board, they were active in lowering a lot of these production numbers. Canada by 2 million tons. Looks like discussion for declines for China, 3 million tons. And as far as other action, kind of interesting that they offset a good chunk of this declining argument with a, in this case, 3.5 million ton increase for Ukraine's crop. Of note here, as far as the export side for Ukraine, they did not make any changes. So net message for us on this report, declining production net for the world, but still in the trade's mind, probably not enough to move prices too much here.
Okay. Let's swing into cotton now. Cotton, we scratched our head with cotton throughout last year, and these monthly reports from the World Ag Outlook Board, and just wondering where maybe those numbers were coming from and what we were looking at. And then as we got to the end of the year, prices never really recovered. And so maybe we didn't plant as much cotton as we could have planted with maybe 90-plus cent cotton. So now that we've kind of set that scenario, we put cotton in the ground, what's USDA seeing as far as this crop, and are they expecting to see the price come up a bit?
You know, USDA did a couple of things interesting for us on the cotton side. Just like wheat, there were changes for both acreage as well as yields. One thing on the acreage side is they did not touch the planted estimate. However, they did lower that harvested estimate. So they're now only implying about 78% of the crop will get harvested. So a problem not as bad as last year, but the general message is quite similar. Keep in mind, 2 years ago, we harvested 91%. Of what was harvested. So with a net decline in acreage, and also in this case, a net decline in their yield estimate, they were active with dropping production, 16.5 million bales last month, now just about 14. So your question as far as will we get higher prices, keep in mind these stock numbers, 3.1 million bales left over. This is lower than the prior 2 years. So certainly for the question for us right now is, if can we get today's rebound? Last trade's up 250. Can that rebound continue in these next few weeks?
Yeah, we've seen the price for cotton just starting to inch its way back up, you know, from the 70s into the mid upper 80s. When we look globally, though, that's part of the challenge is you've got competition from places like Brazil and from even Australia. What are we seeing as far as the world is concerned?
You know, for a lot of these questions, we've been kind of seeing some net decline on today's discussion. And obviously, the U.S. was a good portion of this decline. For today's report, as far as our competitors and whatnot, keep in mind no major changes as far as production movements. We will note that China, which gets a lot of interest for us on the cotton side, they actually did raise the Chinese cotton import, in this case, by about 250,000 tons. Of note here for that cotton argument here on the China side, this is still over last year's number quite a bit aggressively. So we do have a hope that China does do a good, strong import. We'll have to see these next few months.
Couldn't let you go without talking about yield survey. What can you tell us about what Allendale does there?
Certainly right here. So this month of October, of August, is actually quite important for us on a yield side because we all see USDA's numbers. Now let's see if the private market gets in the field and finds that same argument here. Allendale does a nationwide yield survey starting on August 21. We've done this for 25, 30 years or so, and it's a two-week-long farmer survey. So we certainly encourage producers to get a hold of us, 1-800-262-7538, starting August 21, so just 10 days, and get on board and get your local area represented for corn and soybean and wheat yields.
And again, if we want to find out more about Allendale, what's that website again?
Certainly, the website is very simple, allendale-inc.com. Phone number is very simple, 1-800-2-MARKET.
Rich Nelson is Chief Strategist with Allendale in McHenry, Illinois, on today's Agribusiness Report. Where is the beef industry heading? Find out firsthand October 8th, 9th, and 10th at the Gaylord Texan Resort in Grapevine. It's Texas Cattle Feeders Association's annual convention featuring John Foley, a former Blue Angels pilot, and mentalist and illusionist Wayne Hoffman. The 2023 TCFA Annual Convention in Grapevine. Learn more online, tcfa.org.
Texas Corn Producers serves the state's corn farmers through both the Corn Board and the Association. The board is putting your checkoff dollars to work in research, promotion, and education to ensure producer profitability and market expansion. The member-supported association is the farmer's advocate in Austin and Washington, D.C. on issues from the Farm Bill, water and property rights, and more. Join the Texas Corn Producers Association today and get the latest news and information about Texas Corn Producers' efforts online at www.texascorn.org.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Special guest Rich Nelson with Allendale in McHenry, Illinois.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Special guest Rich Nelson with Allendale online, allendale-inc.com.
Texas Corn Producers serves the state's corn farmers through both the Corn Board and the Association. The board is putting your checkoff dollars to work in research, promotion, and education to ensure producer profitability and market expansion. The member-supported association is the farmer's advocate in Austin and Washington, D.C. on issues from the Farm Bill, water and property rights, and more. Join the Texas Corn Producers Association today and get the latest news and information about Texas Corn Producers' efforts online at www.texascorn.org.
Life doesn't come with guarantees, but working with Rob Seco comes pretty close. Our strategic investments in the seed we offer are designed to directly improve your bottom line. From full trait platforms, breeding and development, to field-by-field planning and seed-driven crop inputs, with Rob Seco, you have precisely what you need to improve plant performance and increase yield. Every farm, every crop, and every acre. Learn more at robseco.com.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Brad Rippey with USDA.
Not much change in the week-over-week numbers. We did see a slight decline in overall condition, 38% good to excellent. That's down a point from last week. 32% very poor to poor. That is up 3 percentage points from last week. Wyoming, 87% of the pasture and range good to excellent. A lot of the neighboring states, at least 50% good to excellent. That list includes Colorado at 67%, Utah 64%, and Idaho at 51%, as well as the Great Plains states of Nebraska, 56% good to excellent. And South Dakota, 53%. The eastern one-third of the United States, we have a number of states above 70% good to excellent, most of them in the southeast. We do have some dryness to talk about, but it's rather patchy. We'll start off with our number one state for very poor-to-poor ratings, and that is Texas, 64% very poor-to-poor. Missouri, despite the rain last week, 58% very poor-to-poor. Also dry in the upper Midwest, with Minnesota coming in this week at 51% very poor-to-poor.